soon be 65 million people over age 65. And for financial decision-making, as life goes on, we see two curves.
I think there's a huge opportunity for advisors to give advice to people.
Hi, this is the Insights Panel podcast from Bright House Financial, a podcast for financial professionals about retirement planning. We bring you insights from leading experts to help you stay ahead of the curve and have more productive conversations with your clients. My name is Amy He, and in this episode, the Insights Panel goes in-depth on a new topic, aging and how it affects your clients. As clients age, their bodies, minds, and personal networks all evolve. The panel takes a look at how these changes transform advisor-client relationships and how advisors can guide their clients through aging. Speaking to us are Grant McCracken, social anthropologist and author of Culture and Consumption, and Dan Goldstein, behavioral economist and researcher at Microsoft Research. First, I asked Dan Goldstein about how people change cognitively as they age and what that means about their financial lives.
It's a really important question. It's a really timely question. There will soon be 65 million people over age 65. And for financial decision-making, as life goes on, we see two curves. So one is this curve that has to do with experience with finances. So obviously this starts low when we're around 20 years old, and it goes upwards, our financial competence due to experience. The other factor is cognitive ability, and this goes the other way. Our cognitive ability peaks when we're about 20 years old and declines slowly over time. So we have these two curves that are kind of going in opposite directions. One, financial experience is going up. Two, cognitive ability is going down.
At what age do you think people make their best financial decisions?
Well, researchers have looked at bona fide mistakes that people make throughout their life, and they found that people make their best financial decisions when they're about age 53. A lot of people are surprised by that, thinking it would be younger, but at 53, you have a lot of experience and that pays off. Older than that, and cognitive failures start to trip you up. This has been demonstrated in other ways. For instance, people in their 40s and 50s tend to pay the lowest fees and lowest interest rates, which is a sign of good financial decision making. And tricky problems like figuring out how to move balances between credit cards with different interest rates and so on, these are most easily solved by people in their 40s. So around 40, 50, we start making the best financial decisions.
Behaviorally, how do we change at different stages in our lives?
So we have two kinds of intelligence. Psychologists like to characterize it as two kinds of intelligence. Crystallized intelligence, which is like wisdom. And over your life course, this increases and gradually flattens out. And then we have what's called fluid intelligence, which is kind of cognitive ability, the ability to do mental gymnastics like memorizing numbers and, you know, turning things around in your head. This tends to peak early, I would say around the age of 20 or so, and declines gradually over time. So when you're young, you have low levels of crystallized intelligence or this experience or wisdom, but high levels of fluid intelligence. When you're old, you have higher levels of crystallized intelligence, but lower levels of fluid intelligence. Something called cognitive decline takes hold in later years. Among 80-year-olds, about a quarter of people have cognitive impairment without dementia, and about a quarter of people have dementia. So that means half the population around age 80 has some kind of cognitive decline that could impact their financial decision making. So one reason it's a mistake to delay financial planning to an older age is because of due to cognitive decline, it's been shown that people make worse and worse financial decisions.
So how do you think advisors can spot aging?
So spotting it is tough. If you look to somebody to spot their own cognitive decline, they might not be able to due to what's called anosognosia, which is a lack of awareness. People might refuse to recognize what is evident to others. So it's something that you often want to have a second party, like a spouse or so on, report. What people are generally talking about when they observe cognitive decline is a inability to learn and recall new information, especially, and this is especially the case when it's not just somebody reporting that it's their own difficulty to learn and recall, but when somebody else is corroborating that. People, so for instance, if somebody has difficulty remembering something that they were just told, like a street address, they forget that street address pretty quickly after they were told it, that's a sign of cognitive decline. People also have other kinds of difficulty. For instance, judging distances is something that gets tough as people get older. Driving ability deteriorates with age. And, you know, doing things like turning into a parking spot or avoiding auto accidents gets difficult. In addition, multitasking is something that's harder for people to do as they get older. In financial settings, people make worse decisions, unfortunately, about risk and return. This has been demonstrated experimentally. And people are unable to tell good investments from bad investments. In some studies, people have looked at how susceptible older people are to fraud and false advertising claims, and they find that people are more susceptible to fraud and more susceptible to false advertising claims as they age.
So what can advisors do if they spot these signs of aging?
I think that might depend on the particular advisor and how they feel comfortable talking to the client. What I suggest and what other behavioral economists have suggested is just making it a point of practice, like a rhythm that you engage in, that from age 65, you have a meeting with clients and you tell them, I always meet with my clients at age 65 to make sure beneficiaries are in place and so on. And at that meeting, just make sure that younger members are present, younger members of the family are present, because as, you know, age goes on, it's these younger people who are further from cognitive decline and might need to take on more and more responsibility as the client ages. So I think it's something that you can avoid talking about directly by just making it a default policy of meeting with people at a certain age, and to follow up each appointment with another appointment, just to make sure that you don't go too long without checking in on the person.
That was Dan on how to have difficult conversations with clients as they age. Then I spoke to Grant about the personal lives of people as they approach retirement. I asked him, are there stages when people reassess their lives and financial choices?
So there's several moments in someone's ritual cycle, let's call it, where people say to themselves, okay, time to reassess. And one of those would be the moment you send your last kid to college. For some people, it is the moment they graduate from college, or it's when they take their first job. It's that sense that my kid is out and launched. For other people, it has to do with their employment pattern. You know, are they leaving one job, or leaving one profession for another profession? Anytime there is what the psychologists call this big interrupt, people seize that as an opportunity to kind of reflect on where they are and where they want to be going. But there's a third category here, and I think it's when the financial advisor sits down with people and says, quizzes them very carefully about what they're thinking, where they are in their life, those little thoughts that have been kind of rattling around in their heads, and then says, let me help you think about those. Let me help you give those kind of texture and definition and more substance so that you can begin to plan for them in both the financial sense and in a kind of more practical lifestyle construction sense.
Why is all of that important for an advisor to know?
I think there's a huge opportunity for advisors to give advice to people. The financial stuff, you know, they're all over that. They're great at that. That's their professional competence. It feels like there's another field kind of opening up, and that's the kind of lifestyle advice. And for that, I think advisors want to keep an eye on all the things that they see happening out there. So that's in the course of any given day, there are all these opportunities to glimpse what's happening in the world, and all of that is kind of grist for the mill. If you follow up and you ask about it, we think about the guy, right, who would go into a drugstore and come out again with two great investment ideas because he was curious and he was nosing around and he was asking himself, well, that's interesting. I wonder why that's happening. The advisor who exercises that kind of curiosity, I think, is in a position to soak up this data, which comes in really handy when you're talking to clients. There's another possibility here for the advisor, and that is just to kind of collect, as you work with your clients and you talk to them about what they want for their lives and how they're reinventing themselves for this final 30 of their life, just sort of collect those experiences, and then you can play those back to other clients. And effectively, any client is an opportunity to gather intelligence that you can share with other clients.
How can advisors get clients comfortable enough to share their personal lives?
So, you know, it's a really is a question of kind of asking for permission as you go. You make a small, innocent inquiry about, so what are you thinking about? And it sounds just like a conversational opener. But if somebody is really kind of forthcoming and they say, oh, yeah, no, we're thinking about maybe opening a tiny marina in the Florida Keys, like they've just given you this big gift. They've given you this kind of view corridor into their life. And then the question is, you know, what else are they prepared to share? And you are kind of the owner-operator of the conversation, the analyst or the advisor is. You're always in a position to listen very carefully. And when you think you're getting a tiny bit of hesitation, and, you know, we're all gifted social actors. We can't do well in the social world unless we are. So we're good at detecting small signs of discomfort. But if and when the client gives you permission to go further, to go deeper, to learn more about them, go there. And so what we're talking about here possibly is a real change in the industry. You know, that notion of professional dignity and separation and that's you and this is me and, you know, we're going to respect the boundaries here, that still has to be honored for some purposes. But for other purposes, it's precisely the thing we want to break down and go through.
That was Grant on getting to know your clients' personal lives. Thanks to Grant and Dan for their insights, and don't forget to join us for the next episode of the Insights Panel podcast when we take a look at why advisors need to understand the personal factors that drive their clients' decisions. You can find more episodes of the Insights Panel podcast on brighthousefinancialpro.com/insightspanel or subscribe for free through any podcast app to receive new episodes direct to your mobile device. Stay ahead of the curve with the Insights Panel from Bright House Financial. This information is brought to you courtesy of Bright House Financial, Inc., that provides, through its affiliates, annuities and life insurance products issued by Bright House Life Insurance Company, Charlotte, North Carolina 28277, and in New York only by Bright House Life Insurance Company of New York, New York, New York 10017. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers, and the information presented is for educational purposes only. Speakers were compensated for their participation. Research cited within this podcast include the following: Alzheimer's research and therapy, dementia in the oldest, a multifactorial and growing public health issue, 2013. Stanford Center on Longevity, heightened emotional states increase susceptibility to fraud in older adults, 2016.